Howdy, friends, and welcome into Gridiron Frogs Podcast as a part of the TCU Horn Frogs on SI. I'm your host, Justin Dolan, because you can't handle the Ruth, a Fort Worth area native that, you know, I can't. I'm not going to act positive. I am not going to do my intro like I usually do because there's nothing positive about this show, even though we're all kind of laughing and joking right now as we did in pre-show. I'm Nolan Ruth. My partner in crime is JD Andres here. We're joined by Nate and Carson, who are also writers for TCU Horned Frogs on SI. This is a podcast where we cover TCU football, a smattering of other topics related. And this, we actually joked that we're all wearing black because this one feels like a funeral. This was a very, very bad weekend. And so my opening question that I do for every episode, guys, how bad did this one hurt?
I mean, it was as bad as it could have hurt, especially coming off of a upsetting like comeback win from UCF. Thinking you'd bounce back against an unknown SMU, as Coach Dykes would say. It's kind of disappointing, and you just don't know what's to hold for the rest of the season. So it's just kind of disappointing, and it hurts.
So for me, I'm very in touch with kind of the social media aspect of this rivalry. Like, I love looking at the banter between SMU and TCU Twitter. And I'm not going to lie, we talked a lot of crap. Like, we talked a lot of mess. And honestly, as far as how upsetting it was, probably a 9 or 10 out of 10. Just because, I don't know, losing to Dallas sucks for me.
Yeah, you brought up, before JD goes, you brought up social media. JD had to tweet something that was so painful for him to tweet. He had to do it in the press conference at Ford Stadium. JD, why don't you get, I mean, obviously the listeners of our show know exactly what it was, but why don't you, in case someone missed it, what did you have to do because of this loss?
Yeah, so last week, my good friend Micah, who runs the Just Means Less ACC account, came on the pod. We previewed SMU, and we did our wager that we did with Stanford, where TCU won, and he had told me that he wanted me to tweet that Dallas is better than Fort Worth and that SMU is located in Dallas. Now, the loss hurt, but nothing will pay me as much as having to type that out and then press send and then have to listen to Sonny Dykes explain why the team lost. I was a numb man for the 53-minute drive I had going back to Fort Worth. And I wrote about it in my article that there were a lot of times during that drive I thought about what I could say. And I still don't know what I'm going to say. So anything that comes out during this is, I'm going to apologize in advance.
You confidently told me in the press conference at least three different times, I know what my 90 seconds is going to be about. But you said it every time something different was brought up. So I don't think you actually know exactly what you want to say in your 90-second rant of this show. I'm still not convinced you do.
Because every time I changed my mind about what I was going to say in my 90 seconds, right, it was because over the point, I was like, it can't get any worse. I know what I want to talk about now. And then it just proceeded to get worse. And I was like, 90 seconds is nowhere near enough. That covers the first 3 minutes of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, this is bad. This is JD's tweet, word for word. Dallas is better than Fort Worth, and SMU is located in Dallas. And then he said, I also hate sports. And then he tagged. then obviously he tweeted the post-game press conference. But I liked your final thoughts. He said, final thoughts of the night. This was a trotling. Frogs were never in the game at any point. I agree with you, JD. Second thought, you've lost two straight, and now you go into Kansas playing a reeling Jayhawks team. You lose this week, you put a fork in the season. We'll break that down in a second. And then your last, right after that, you said, actually, now is my final thought. Maybe the rushing game only looked good in fall camp because they were going against our defense. I don't know, but something isn't working and has to be fixed. So I'm going to go to – I will let you go last, JD, but I'm going to go to Nate and Carson real quick. His point of we've lost two straight, now we go to Kansas. We play them at Arrowhead, and if we lose this week, we put a fork in the season. I frankly agree with that, but I want to get your takes on it.
So I mean, I think I think it's kind of obvious. Yeah, if you lose this week, you have a losing record, and this isn't even necessarily the hard part of the schedule. I mean, there are some teams with identities, but you haven't played Utah yet, and I don't even want to imagine what that's going to look like right now. So yeah, I mean, I think this game is do or die against Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with that statement, as we only have a one-loss Big 12 team right now. Forget what happened last week. They're not in the Big 12. It really doesn't matter to make the championship if we can make a run. I've seen things weirder happen. I mean, TCU baseball went on a run a couple years ago. Anything can happen. TCU sports are weird. So, but you lose to Kansas, you're out of it, and it's going to be hard to claw your way back into even bowl contention, because the mood's going to be down. So I think it's a must win going into Arrowhead, being that big of a stadium. I think it'll be an excitement if TCU can get that win.
I agree. We're approaching the midway point of the season, and I completely agree. We haven't had a conference win yet. Our best win is against Stanford, and then we beat Long Island, who's a nobody. 2 years ago, I didn't even know they had a football team. Now we lose two straight. I completely agree. And, you know, the longer the season goes on, I'm an OU fan. And I was telling one of my friends, like, man, OU's not going to make a bowl game. You know, when you look at OU's schedule, right? Now, that's a different conversation for a different podcast. But you look at TCU's schedule, and you can really make the same argument. We probably might not find a bowl game if we don't figure out what the heck is going on. And a loss to Kansas would really, really make that a lot tougher and really just make the current situation a lot worse. JD, you now have the floor on that one particular point you made. Would you like to back it up? Would you like to retract it? What are you feeling about that statement?
Oh, you're muted.
You're on mute, buddy.
That's probably best, actually. Hang on.
Yeah. you took the words right out of my mouth. Pretty much exactly the angle I went with it was, you look at it, you lose to Kansas, you're 2-3 on the season. You're now facing three straight, including a second-half comeback victory from UCF, a blowout against your rival, and then now you're losing to a Kansas team who can't seem to find their footing right now. After that, you got Houston. There's your grace. There's your, you should win this. 98% of the time, you should win this. That puts you at 3-3 on the season. Then you're at Utah. Sorry, you're not going to win that. Then you play Tech. Who knows what happens when you play Tech? Because no one knows. Then you play Baylor, rivalry game. It's a toss-up. Then you play Oklahoma State. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't care how bad Ollie Gordon's done this year. He's going to run all over us. Then you get Arizona, who maybe that could be a good game. Maybe that's a win. And then you could...
I could see that one being a shootout and actually being fun.
Yeah, then you got Cincinnati.
I did put that game on upset alert at the beginning of the season, by the way.
Yes.
Which team's the upset for, though? Because both teams have been pretty disappointing right now.
Well, I mean, obviously, preseason Arizona was going to be a clear favorite. So, obviously, okay. I mean, TCU beating Arizona, that's how I mean upset alert.
Yeah, I mean, the only saving grace is that you got this week. If you win this week and you win against Houston, you're back at 4-2, and then you get a bye week before you go to Utah. But you lose this week, and then you have a close game against Houston, all bets are off, and I think the gloves come off on Twitter, and I think you see a lot of really funny memes that have already started circulating. But, yeah, I'm just – you got to win this week, or I think you're going to lose a lot of the fan base.
Yeah.
Maybe the – quote, maybe the rushing game only looked good in fall camp because they were going against our defense. I don't know, but something isn't working and has to be fixed. Those are the words of JD. Nate and Carson, what do you say?
I mean, that's a completely fair statement because TCU's run defense is, I believe, the worst. I think it's bottom five in the NCAA. I mean, we've given up, what was it, like over 360 yards of rushing attack in the last two games. Now, granted, UCF, like, that's a really good rushing team, but still, that's inexcusable, especially when you're, I don't know, especially when you're a team as high of caliber as TCU is.
Yeah, I mean, it's inexcusable what's going on. You should be able to at least apply some pressure on the run. And it doesn't seem to be happening. And I think JD's tweet was right online. just being in that, going against our defense, I think it's just clearly, like, the picture's just clear that that's why our running game was doing good. I think we need to switch some things up even in our running game. And I say throw JoJo Earl out there at the running back position. I mean, he got one carry for 9 yards. It was positive. So somebody quick that can at least break through, because our running backs aren't it.
Okay, while we're kind of on that topic, I'm really shocked that Jeremy Payne hasn't gotten more attempts, because TCU really likes to run the ball up the middle for some reason lately, and Cam Cook is not a guy that can hit a hole hard and burst out for 9 to 10 yards. He just isn't. I'm sorry. Like,
so part of that for me is, like, we have not really had a problem recruiting skill positions at wide receiver, quarterback,
right,
and even on the defensive side of the ball. But for whatever reason, TCU just cannot get a running back. It's been a problem for, I can't even tell you how long. I mean, I can probably name two running backs in the last 10 years off the top of my head. That's about it. Running backs just seem to be an issue. Now, before I let JD get the last word to back up his claim or take back his claim, if he so desires, Nate, I'm glad you brought up JoJo Earl, my Parker County boy right there. By the way, Eric McAllister, I thought, had a great game. Another Parker County boy out of Azel. JD's giving me a really dirty look right now. But I will say that I was so disappointed. And this isn't anything that anybody could help. I was really disappointed that Haas Haney was hurt, because this would have been the game, especially in the second half, that you bring him in to do that read option. You get a quarterback that can run the ball and really start to open up the run game instead of doing exactly what they know you're going to do and giving it to Cam Cook twice in four downs and try to go up the middle. I thought Haas Haney would have been a great weapon for that. Obviously, I do not want Haas to be the starting quarterback right now, and I don't want him throwing the ball yet. But that is a great weapon, and that option would be a great package, and it would have really done well against SMU, and I firmly believe that. JD, you've heard us all. You know what you tweeted. You can respond to us, back up your tweet, retract your tweet, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I've got to go a little play-by-play on this one, because there's a lot I got to respond to. First of all,
I kind of diverted everything.
Eric McAllister had a great game, but
that drop pass,
the drop pass was the biggest play of the entire game. Let's take it back, right?
Whoa. Okay.
The single biggest play of the entire game. You're looking at the score, right? It's 21-31. TCU has the ball. Okay. There are a minute and a half till halftime. TCU has proven they can drive the ball at this point down the field. So 21-31, a minute and a half. He catches that pass. TCU now has a first and 10 with a minute 20-something left to go in the halftime at SMU's 35-yard line. He catches that pass. TCU ends up, even if they get a field goal, right, and they settle, it's 24-31. You go into halftime at one-score game. Now he drops that pass. It's a third down. Josh Hoover forces a pass into double coverage. SMU runs it back, and now it's 21-38. TCU goes three and out the next series, and SMU gets a field goal. It's 21-41 now. Now you're down 20 at halftime rather than it being a one possession game. That is the single biggest play of that entire game that changed the entire course of it. Yeah, you could talk about the first 3 minutes of what happened and how they came out sloppy, but they still fought back and had this a super close game. Would have been a shootout, and I think it would have been in TCU's favor because TCU can air the ball out.
I think people forget sometimes this game was 17-14 at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was the single greatest play. So it's one of those where, I give my props to Eric McAllister. I think he played a fantastic game. Him and Jack Besh did their thing that they have been doing. But no one remembers you for what you do.
Yep.
Everyone remembers what you didn't do, and that's the pass. And that will stick with me for probably the rest of the season, because this could be the catalyst game for the rest of the season. TCU might not win a game again. TCU could go on a run now, right? So there's a lot of things that can happen, and I think that pass was part of it. More so, I don't think JoJo Earl should get any more playing time. I think it should just be Jeremy Payne. I also think that it's not at the fault of the running back room. The offensive linemen just have no run blocking ability right now. It's kind of impressive on where it is. And I truly think that I've thought about that tweet a lot, that the rushing offense looked good because they were going against our rushing defense. And I think it is one hilarious when you think about it in a vacuum. Like, you were only good because they're so bad. But yeah, I mean, I don't, you guys talked about our rush offense. I want to talk about the rush defense. There have only been two games, Stanford and Long Island, that the opponent has had more passing yards than rushing yard. Stanford had 35 more passing yards than rushing yards, and LIU had 10. LIU had 60 rushing yards against you and 69 passing yards against you. You cannot take yourself serious as a team and as a contender if you can, one, not run the ball, and two, cannot stop the run. Teams in college are built on running the ball. That's what starts the RPOs. That's what starts everything. It is, I think it's enabling teams to be able to run the clock and keep TCU's offense off the field. And it's just, it's become a bigger issue that you're facing the third and, okay, third and 25, or third and 15, I apologize, that SMU was facing in TCU's side of the
Oh,
field.
yeah.
And SMU said, you know what? Here's Bashard Smith. And here's a run. And SMU got the first down, and then he ran 10 more yards and scored. When
I
a
won't
team
lie.
is so unafraid of you, do you know how much you can't take yourself serious?
I won't lie. I laughed after that play because that was saddening. That's all I can describe it as.
What? Okay, one last thing, and then we'll move on. I'm okay with not running the ball if I'm TCU. I'm okay with it. But commit to the pass. What we saw a lot in the first half against SMU was Briles trying to force the ball to be ran successfully. You just air it out. If Hoover's got to throw 60 times, he's got the talent around him to be able to be successful at least 70% of the time, which is what you'd consider a great game by a quarterback.
I want to say this though to that point. Just the offensive line looked so bad that Hoover was pressured. I mean, even on a three-step drop, he immediately had to step right back into the pocket and make a quick read and get a really bad pass off, which is what happened in his last interception, where he really just overthrew Jack Besh, and the defender was there at the 3 yard line just with his hands waiting for the interception. I don't disagree with you about abandoning the run, but we've got to commit to the pass. But the offensive line really just is not that good. And that is something that, as a Sooner fan, I've now had to admit for two different teams that just it's not good. And I don't I we got to figure something else out with the offensive line. And honestly, I think that's part of why we can't get the run game going as well.
Well, so whenever I was sitting in class, I had already finished all the stuff I needed to do. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna go watch kind of the highlights of the TCU and SMU game just so I can have some more knowledge about it tonight, right? As you do. And I was watching the offensive line, and I would say about 75% of the time, they're not going forwards at all. Like, they're not getting any leverage
Nope.
going towards the defense. And I mean, yeah, like we've already said multiple times on this podcast, you cannot run the ball if you have an offensive line like that. I would like to know how TCU goes from one of the best recruiters of offensive linemen in Texas, like probably 4 or 5 years ago, to one of the worst.
That's a title that ironically now probably belongs to Texas Tech.
For offensive linemen?
For offensive linemen, absolutely. Yeah.
I
Te
mean,
and
I
Tech
to be
Tech
fair, I haven't.
Texas is a very close second, but the best
I was gonna
offensive lineman
say.
is Tech without a doubt.
Really? Okay, I haven't watched a lot of Tech this year, so that could be true. But yeah, I find that decline very weird.
Nate, anything to add?
No, I mean, going off of what Carson said, the decline, I mean, I feel like we've always been in a position where we can't figure out like the pieces needed for an offensive line. We're always just like scraping to get a full offensive line together. And I think Dykes and the rest of the coaching staff have focused too much on getting like star players like on the receiving end, and like cornerbacks and stuff, that they're not focusing on the work halls, the like the workers that are going to be working for your team. And I think that our recruiting mindset's going to have to change in the future to do so. I think Gary Patterson did a good job working with these players to grow them. It may not be the best player, but he's getting the guys that want to do their job and do it right. And I think that's what has changed the mentality wise. I think you're getting players that are already think that they're the top, and they're trying to just stay at their position skill set.
So in training camp before the season, Sonny, he came out and he said, when he was asked about the offensive line and kind of how they progressed, I'm really wondering if we see some changes at the offensive line this coming week, because he was saying in training camp that the guys behind the starters that he has slated right now have closed the gap in terms of skill and ability. So could we see a change?
I think we are. I think we're going to see some significant changes. I don't think at the
I think you have to.
I don't think at the skill positions yet, but definitely the line is where it's going to start. Oh. We're going to see some really big changes. And I think on both offensive and defensive lines. I'm a big believer in Nono Safamesa. I always have been. But I mean, how many times have we heard his name called over 4 weeks? Maybe five? Like, has he really made that big of an impact? Like, just the depth chart, I think, is going to see a lot of change. Before we get any further in that, let's go ahead and break down this game a little bit more. So the first drive for SMU goes 11 plays, 41 yards, and just over 5 minutes. Now, I want to read this out to you because this is what catches my eye. First and 10, second and 7. First and 10, second and 5. First and 10, second and 10. Third and 5, first and 10. Second and 9, third and 5. Fourth and 5, we finally forced the field goal. But SMU really just drove down with no resistance. They had no negative play on that opening drive. Now, of course, the first positive of that game was forcing them to kick the field goal. So, I mean, of course, we feel bad we gave up points, but our offense hadn't touched the field yet, and we forced them into a field goal. So we know we can stop them. I want to know what y'all felt after that first SMU drive. Like, forget the rest of the game. On that first drive, what was going through y'all's mind?
Wow, SMU can run the ball.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I could tell, because, I mean, Rashard Smith, all credit to him. That dude averaged 7 yards a carry. Like, that is insane for a running back.
Yeah, I mean, same with Carson. I mean, doing my Know Your Foe article, I knew Breshard Smith was going to be a problem, and he reminded me a lot of UCF and their play style, and it kind of worried me. But in that opening drive, seeing that we couldn't stop the run, I was like, okay, we're going to be in for a long game, that we're not going to be able to make mistakes if we want to win this game, because we're going to have to score a lot. And that became true. We just didn't come out with a win.
Look, you're going to make me be the optimist again. And I don't like playing this role.
After that game, I'm going to make you be the optimist?
Because I don't. Look. Everyone, and I don't care if you knew football or not, you knew what SMU's game plan was going to be. That first drive did not surprise me at all. Did not. Because that's what TCU's defense has been this year, has been bend, don't break. SMU did what they were going to do, especially on an opening drive with a quarterback who's still trying to get his feet under him. That was the most scripted first drive I've ever seen, and I was cool with it. What I wasn't cool with was the stuff that happened after. And I want to talk about this before it gets swept under. Does anyone know how many rushing attempts SMU had on the game?
40, right around 40.
42. I don't quite know where you're going. Ooh, but 42. I don't want you to step on where I'm about to go.
Does anyone know how many rushing attempts TCU had on the game?
SMU had 42. I'm going to guess, just for the joke, 69.
TCU had 32. SMU only rushed the ball 10 times more.
Wow.
Only 10 times more. You would never have guessed that. You looked at the first drive. You looked at the rest of their drives. SMU.
He's not kidding. I got it up in front of me.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I'm telling you, this game was one, not as bad as you think it was, and two, was also way worse than you think it was, depending which angle you look at it.
So I'm glad you said that, because I was gonna walk through. I was literally only gonna walk through the first quarter, because the first quarter is where everything went south. This game was won in the first quarter. So in contrast to SMU's first drive, TCU's first drive, SMU did not have a single play go for negative yardage, and they only had one play that went for zero. TCU's first play goes for negative yardage, so it's first and 10, now it's second 11. Then Hoover throws incompletion. I'm sorry, an incompletion. It's now third and 11. Then we get the long first down to Savion Williams. It was a great play. First and 10. Then we get second and 9. Then we pick up 8 yards, third and 1. Now it's, then Cam Cook gets nothing. It's fourth and 1. And then that's when all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
And my question, as someone who considers himself an offensive mind, and I genuinely, genuinely hated this play call. Why are you calling the triple option when it's clearly never been practiced? You haven't run it in a game so far this season. And of course, Hoover's going to fumble the ball as soon as he does the exchange with the fullback. You can see it in the replay. As he is trying to pull the ball back, that ball's already out. It wasn't when he got hit. It was a bad exchange. So why was that your play call on fourth and one? I could think of a dozen other plays that I've seen from TCU in the 3 weeks prior that would have been a much better play call than the triple option right there in that moment.
I want to find and see where, because TCU's done, you know, the quarterback sneak a few times this year.
It was the first touchdown.
I don't think we've missed one this year. I don't think that it has been an unsuccessful play. I don't know. It's like offensively, we just want to confuse ourselves as much as possible. Kind of to JD's, like going back to JD's point earlier about just become a passing team. Like, that's okay. TCU has a receiving core that can compete with a lot of people, like teams in the nation. Why not just play to your strength? I don't know. I don't know football as much as you guys, I think, but I don't know. It seems like a common sense thing to me.
Yeah, me convinced.
Wow. All right. I see where we stand, Nolan.
Look, man.
No, I mean, it's the same Sonny Dykes team that I've always known. That fourth down is not his thing, and people can blame Kendall Briles all they want, but we saw this in the national championship run when we ran it straight down the middle three straight times and could not get in. And we also saw it earlier this season with UCF, and it's consistent bad play calls, whether it be Garrett Riley under offensive coordinator or whether it be Kendall Briles. I think there's a common coordinator here, and it's Sonny Dykes. I think he makes the big calls in big moments, and I think that's what's going on here. And I think he needs to turn over the full playing call to somebody else.
So let me
1 second. TCU had 32 first downs on the game. Do you know how many times they decided to run the ball on first down? 20 out of the 32. 20 out of the 32 for an average of 2.9 yards per game. TCU's average third down distance to go was nearly 8 yards. 7.7 yards exactly was what they averaged needed on third down. You're going to tell me 32 first downs, you run the ball on 20 of them, and at some point you don't decide to change it up? You don't decide to do anything? Third down conversion percentage, TCU 50%, SMU 58.3. TCU was 3 of 4 on fourth downs. TCU had 7 runs stuffed for 22% of their runs, which means they got no game. SMU also had 7. I'm going to say something crazy. The defense played a lot better than what they're getting credit for.
I don't disagree.
I mean, I think at some point you kind of got to look at special teams in all of this, because I think special teams is kind of your biggest.
The biggest part of this game was the penalties. penalties.
Yeah, because we had over 140 yards in penalties. No,
it was something like that. Yeah,
it was something crazy. Hang
on. It was 135, 9 penalties on the offense, 4 on the defense.
I'm on fire right now. Oh my gosh,
9 on
as opposed to SMU's 7 for 77.
Yeah, so yeah. TCU had 3 unsportsmanlike conducts, 2 of them being on the head coach. 1 roughing the passer on defense, 1 holding on defense. On offense, they had 3 false starts, 2 offsides, 1 holding, 1 illegal formation, and 1 kick catch interference.
So we add all that up, and the one thing we can't forget is 5 turnovers to 1. We had 3 fumbles lost and 2 interceptions thrown. You literally take away all those turnovers and 2 of those unsportsmanlike penalties, we probably win this game. I mean, I think that's on the table.
Yeah, or so at least if you cut those turnovers in half, it becomes a one-score game.
Yeah. So we got to move on because we can go on for hours and we don't want to lose our audience here. JD, you have one more thing you want to say. I just saw your face. What do you want to say?
Oh, I shouldn't have looked at this. Okay. Gosh. Second, you're looking at the amount of attempts compared to each other. In the second half, when TCU was playing catch up, they ran the ball 16 times, only threw it 19. You're trying to play catch up and you only threw the ball 3 more times?
What the heck?
Oh, you want to know something else as well? That last drive with Ken Seals only threw it twice or 3 times, I think. That was
3 times for 19 yards.
I get it if you just want to, play possum, roll over and play dead. But not in a rivalry game. You cannot do that.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I have a couple more tweets, and then I have one final question for everybody. I did this one. This was on Saturday night after Kansas State and BYU wrapped up, and we'll get into that in a minute. I'm not going to lie. There were a couple drinks that had been had after the game before I tweeted this. But I stand by it.
No.
And I stand by this. Look, okay. I have been in this industry for 8 years. I've covered football at every level from 6-man to private school 6-man to private school 11-man to 6A to 5A to Division 3 to NAIA to now Division 1 thanks to this site. I've never, ever seen a team beat itself as bad as TCU did in this one. Yeah. I mean, I was in the press box. JD looked at me at halftime and he said, would you rather take the second half against UCF again, or would you rather take that first half against SMU? And this is at halftime. And I said, you know what? I would rather take that second half against UCF because at least you got beat. You didn't beat yourself. You didn't hand them that half on a silver platter, beautifully prepared while they were wrapping a bib around themselves and you're in a waiter's uniform and filling up their water glass.
Yeah. I kind of going off of the penalties thing that we were talking about. I mean, that can be coached, and that's, I think, the primary reason that TCU's struggled with penalties so much this year. Maybe not on like the offensive line stuff with like the holding calls. I mean, you're getting beat. You got to stop him from absolutely giving your quarterback a concussion. I get it. I understand those penalties. The unnecessary stuff, illegal formations, that's inexcusable. Like I hate to rip into the team like that, but you have to play smarter than that.
The illegal formation wasn't really TCU. I was just going to say that before Nate goes. It was one of those NFL calls where he was slightly lined up, and he even checked with the side judge to make sure he was good and got the illegal formation. So it was an awful call, but I get your sentiment.
Okay. Go ahead, Nate. I agree with JD. JD and Jeremy Clark were both talking on either side of me about that in the press box. I agree. That was a crap call.
No, gotcha. I mean, it's just little. I'm upset about the little things, the unsportsmanlike conducts, the false starts. That is the signs of an undisciplined team. And a lot of it happened by just our O-line. Just false starts. It's just unnecessary. And I think, I just think, I hear a lot of chirping from the defense as well. Just shut up and play ball. Just shut up and play ball. Play your game. There's no reason to freaking mouth off to SMU, who's up by that many points already. Just shut up, play your game, and keep chipping away. You're showing them defeat by chirping back at them, and then throw tag on another unsportsmanlike conduct or something. It's just unnecessary crap that I'd be up in their butts about if I were coach. And, I mean, until we get these small things fixed, I don't think we can even touch the O-line or even the running situation or even the defensive run package or whatever. I mean, until we fix the minor errors, we're not going to be able to fix anything else.
I don't know. I'm not a big Cam Cook guy. I think you have to throw Jeremy Payne back there. Jeremy Payne averaged, I think it was at least 3 yards. Yeah. 3.5
even,
yards per carry.
Even Dominic Johnson got positive yardage every time he touched the ball.
I like Dominic. Okay. I said this at the beginning of the season. I like our running back room. Like there isn't a problem that I have with it. I just didn't know who was going to start. Now I know who should start. And it's either Jeremy Payne or Dominic Johnson. I don't think Trey Sanders is big enough to be an every down back.
Chase Curtis had one carry for 3 yards. Cam Cook had 14 for 24. I mean, Chase Curtis at the moment is a better running back than Cam Cook is when you look at the statistics.
I like
and he's
Chase
a tight
Curtis.
End. Yeah.
I like Chase Curtis.
So I was going to go on to this one more tweet that I did. But before I do that, because I actually kind of want to end on this tweet before we just kind of do a Big 12 quick hits on other results. Let's talk ejection. Now, JD and I got a direct answer. Well, not even really a direct answer, because Dykes was kind of avoiding exactly what happened.
Right.
From y'all's point of view, watching live, what went through y'all's mind? Like, because this was back-to-back plays with Sonny Dykes getting an unsportsmanlike conduct, which, by the way, lit up both sides of the crowd. Like, it was insane to see.
Yeah, I think from a player perspective, there are two ways that kind of event can affect you. And this is me going back to my baseball days. Like, let's say my coach gets ejected for a questionable call. As an athlete, you either get up on your horse and you play the best half of football your entire life, or the entire team shuts down. And honestly, I didn't hate the response that TCU gave, at least offensively. I mean, they played fairly good. But I do think that getting ejected in that game might not be the move. Because I think to the fan base and to maybe your other coaches as well, the message is that, okay, when the going gets tough, I don't want to be around it anymore. That's kind of what I took away. That's kind of the vibe that I took away from that ejection.
Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I was just confused watching it on TV. I was like, oh, he just got tossed. And I kind of didn't like it at the moment. But I kind of liked seeing, like, let's see what our team responds with. And I kind of, like Carson said, they kind of responded well initially. But like, I think that moment kind of tested to see if like our players could stand still without Dykes and see what kind of could take place. But I just think it was kind of not the place to do it for him being the former SMU coach. You know, you're going to get slander for that. And it's already a rivalry game. You're already getting killed. And so now you get ejected and it's just not a good look.
I will say I didn't see the calls. Like I didn't see the penalties that happened.
No, nobody
so I don't,
did.
Nobody did. Okay.
The first penalty nobody was a true holding call.
That was a true holding call.
Well, they weren't calling a holding on Sonny Dykes.
The one he got ejected on was what we assume is him saying, "Oh, you're not gonna throw a flag now."
So,
and that's what probably got him tossed.
So okay. Sonny did confirm in the press conference that both times it came from a different official. So I don't know what that means. And he was actually he was asked in the press conference, what happened. He said it was probably, while he wanted to, it probably wasn't in his best interest to disclose what was said or what happened.
Right.
He did admit that the first one was warranted, and the second one he had no idea why it was thrown. But Carson, much to your point, I agree with you actually, because when it first happened and he's walking off the field doing, I mean, what Donald Trump did a month ago with, you know, blood streaming down his face, throwing up the fist and everything. You know, I was like, man, that should fire this team up. That right. should fire this team up. I mean, because Carson, much like you, I have a very baseball mindset when it came to that particular moment. You know, your manager gets tossed. You know, he's going to step up. He's going to try to do something to fire y'all up or come to y'all's defense or something that's going to get under your skin. And much to both you and Nate, y'all's credit, I didn't really hate the response from the team either. That game was already well out of hand. And that yeah. we had shown our rear ends to them already, and they had had it. They knew exactly what we were going to do. They knew what the response was. There was really no coming back. Could Dice have handled it better? I'll say that. Yes, he really could have. And he admitted that himself. But I will say, when it happened, I did, Carson, I had the same mindset as you. I was like, hey, look, you've got to do something to fire up this team. I'm a big hockey guy, right? When the captain goes up and just fights somebody for no reason, man, like, fire somebody up. Get this game going. Obviously, it didn't work. And I don't think that was actually the right way to handle it. But
no. I'm not. No.
It was definitely not the right way to handle.
No,
it. But I can see that point.
Right. Yeah. Look, and
I talked about it. I called it. Did I not, Nolan? I looked at you in the first quarter and I said, Dykes is going to get ejected today.
You did. You did. And he hadn't even had a flag thrown on him yet.
Here is the thing. How can you expect your team to be disciplined if you can't be disciplined yourself? And what? I'm not saying that what Dykes did was wrong. Absolutely. The refs were awful. Go after them. But to get the, after you should get your first, you should just immediately just be like, hey, you know what? The last thing you need is an ejection. You know the optics. You know, Abe Kamara said post game when we talked to him that it really hurt him and probably others on the team to watch their leader have to leave the field and their coach because he got ejected. Now, I'm not saying this is like all Dykes' fault that the team had penalties. Obviously, the players committed it. But how can you expect them to be disciplined if you're getting penalties and ejected from a game too? It's just a bad look from optics. I don't hate him standing up for his team. In fact, I love it. But at a certain point, you're doing more harm than you are for the risk of a good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go into, cause I think the defense got worse after he got ejected, but I'm not going to address that just because they're playing on their back foot all game from the first half. So like, when did he get ejected? He got ejected with about 10 minutes to go in the third.
No, second play.
Second play.
In the second half.
Okay. Yeah. So
second play from scrimmage.
Okay. So yeah, TCU puts up 21 points in the second half. SMU obviously puts up 23. So yeah, pretty even game, but yeah, the first 10 minutes of that game just kind of, and like I told JD, and like I said after the UCF game, this game was going to be won within the first few minutes. Like I absolutely called that.
You did, and JD and I were talking about that actually. I think we said it. JD, when did we say it? Was it the post game video that I brought up, Carson, saying like this game was won really in the first minute?
I feel like this.
I gave you credit, by the way.
Yeah. No, thank you. I saw this game being very, very momentum based, and that's exactly what it was. But that's my final thought.
So we are closing in on an hour, and we try not to go too far over an hour on this show. So I want to bring up one more thing before we try to do some Big 12 quick hits on the other results from the conference, because JD and I will go into week previews tomorrow on tomorrow's show. But I tweeted this yesterday, and I need to give some context for the tweet. So I go to church right off of I-30 in Montgomery, just north of campus. and my family, not going to go in the whole situation, but I ended up by myself for lunch. And just instinctually, I ended up at Dutch's. And I was driving down University, and I ended up at Dutch's, and I can hear the feed from Buffalo Brothers next door through the wall. University was dead on Sunday. I mean, you could feel the loss.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I was to the point where I wasn't even really thinking about it anymore. You know, I watched the rest of the OU game. I was mad about that. Went to church and everything. Like, it, you know, I truly put that game behind me for just a little bit. And now I'm being reminded of how much this hurts. So I put out on Twitter, I said, you can definitely feel the loss at TCU. Came down University Street for lunch after church. The whole strip is a lot quieter than normal. And I know all of you live right around the area. Were y'all experiencing the same thing yesterday?
Yeah. You know, normally after a game day, it's not like, you know, it's not buzzing really after a TCU win. Like, there'll be people at Buffalo Bros. But there's more movement. Yesterday or Sun? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Monday. It was yesterday. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm tweaking.
I know
out.
It feels like it's been a full week since that loss, but
so yesterday morning, I went and got some coffee just because I needed a jump start to watch, you know, NFL Sunday. And I saw maybe two cars, and I drove for about 2 miles, and I don't know, I found that really weird. I noticed it because I think the Iron Skillet, while it doesn't get a lot of national coverage, I think that's that's the biggest rivalry for this area of town, because yeah, not only are you competing against Dallas, which, according to JD, is much better than Fort Worth. I don't know why he said that. That was weird. But
where's the kick button?
But
there it is. I can mute him.
But sorry, JD. But also, that's a big rivalry for recruiting purposes. Like, athletes that are on the fence that have gotten offers from SMU and TCU, they look at this rivalry a lot for who they want to go to.
Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't around campus too much until the night, because I had work the next morning, which was unfortunate. But when I was at the golf course, you could even feel it. There were a few TCU students coming in, and they kind of just felt like kind of upset. They were like, even their motive, they're like, that game yesterday, I mean, it was just like, it was a new level of low. Like, when UCF beat us, I mean, fans were like, okay, we'll jump back. But, like, students are now like, okay, where do we go now as a program, as a school? And being at the last time officially that, like, you're going over there to Dallas with this, as it being a natural game, it's kind of upsetting. And you would like to go out with a bang, and now you just don't know what you do. So it's just kind of, I don't know. It's just kind of just the momentum right now, and just the whole area of Fort Worth is going to be down.
Nate, I'm so glad you just said what you did. Which, first of all, I had a great day yesterday because the Cowboys lost, and it's one of my favorite things in the world.
No, I'm leaving. This podcast is over.
Second thing. The Cowboys suck. But anyway, second thing is, do you know how much more pressure this puts on next year?
By the way, I'd like to just really quick remind you, you're a Patriots fan.
Same record. Do you know how much more pressure this puts on next season?
Oh, yeah.
Rather that be Sonny Dykes at the helm or a different coach or whatever it is. Next season could potentially be the last time TCU and SMU ever match up. The last thing you want is your last two ever matchups to be getting beat by them. One, including an embarrassing beatdown at SMU. There is so much added pressure now to a game that shouldn't have added pressure. This is a game that is supposed to be a rivalry that, you know what, it might be close because it's a rivalry. It's not supposed to be a, hey, you have to win this, circle this game. It is now a circle this game kind of thing next year. And that is not where you want to be a full 365 days out.
No, I completely agree, especially with it returning to Fort Worth. That's really, really bad. And for those who, I know TCU and SMU both pull in a lot of people that are not from the DFW area or from the state of Texas, but the actual city rivalry between Fort Worth and Dallas is real and legit, and it literally goes it literally goes back 200 years. So the fact that this game is played and the fact it's not going to be played anymore, even as an OU fan, I hate really, really bad. Because this was the one game a year that I could be all Fort Worth. Because I'm Fort Worth. I'm born and raised Fort Worth. And I hate that it's not going to happen anymore.
I'm glad it's over. I'm going to say it. I don't care.
That's because you're a coward.
No, it's because why would I ever want to step foot in Dallas?
Real. No, that's real.
Because I'm a diehard hockey fan and I love the Dallas Stars as much
That's a fair point. I love the Stars. And now I forgot I'm going to be there in like 6 weeks anyways. But anyways, that's a different part. That's Highland Park.
Be loud, wear green, your Stars.
You're banned, JD, from Dallas.
That's fine.
Not allowed to go to Mavs or Stars games anymore at all. At all. Or concerts in Dallas. And even if some
you'll
random
never
person
catch
offers
me at a
you,
concert in Dallas, and you'll never catch me at a Mavs game.
Even if someone offers you tickets to Red River just for fun, you're not allowed. You are not allowed in Dallas anymore.
Okay, but I like to stay fair.
I don't care. You just spoke about Dallas that way. You're not allowed.
Hey, Big Tex doesn't want you there.
Yeah, exactly.
He does.
You just offended Big Tex.
I have a Texas tattoo. I think I can say what I want about Big Tex.
That just moving went off on. Anyway, moving on. We got to wrap this up. We'll talk more about the state fair when OU Texas weekend comes up, because I know I'm going to be getting ribbed a lot for that weekend. Cincinnati shuts out Houston 34-0. I think that was a good win for the Bearcats. I mean, I know Houston's terrible, but we were really thinking about Cincinnati being pretty terrible as well. So 34-0, I think, is pretty encouraging for the Bearcats. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I mean that's I mean, because they're now 3-1. Their only loss is to Pitt, but Pitt's not a terrible team. But yeah, I think that kind of gives them life.
I would agree.
Does it? I mean, it's two bottom feeders. What'd you call it? A pillow fight, Nolan? He's muted right now and his screen went away. But yeah, he called it a pillow fight.
I mean,
be careful what you say until we beat these schools, JD.
I was gonna say,
brother, if we don't beat these schools, I don't think I'll ever watch TCU again. So you won't see me anymore.
Okay, I'm writing that down so we know that you're not allowed in the stadium next season if we lose those games.
I do want to look at this game real
quick. I won't even be in the state when they play Houston. So I won't even be watching that game. I will be in the air play Houston.
There was a knock at my trailer door, but yes, a pillow fight is what I call this one. But still, I think 34-0 is a good. I mean, for the Bearcats, that's a good response because we've been talking all season about how horrible they're probably going to be. I think that's an encouraging win for the Bearcats.
Bearcats really like to spread the ball around. There's like 9 different receivers that caught a pass in that game.
Didn't they hand it off to like 5 different running backs too?
They've got
5 different guys carried the ball. Yeah.
Shoot. We're screwed.
No, more than that. Hang on. 8 different guys carried the ball.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Bearcats. I'm telling you, man. See, there's something about the name Bearcats, you know, Aledo.
Oh, no.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
At this point, I just bring up Aledo just to make JD
mad. Where's the mute button again?
West Virginia over Kansas in a game that I thought was actually pretty ugly given the score 32-28. The Mountaineers beat the Jayhawks.
That was disgusting.
Yeah, that was just bad football.
I went into that game thinking like, all right, this is kind of a rebound for Kansas. You know, West Virginia's going to like they're gonna look good offensively. No, that made me angry to watch.
I'm gonna refrain from saying anything because it's Kansas week. So it was a great, well played game by both teams, and I'm glad they both had fun.
I'm picking up on your sarcasm.
I was gonna say.
Iowa State takes down Arkansas State 52-7. That one doesn't mean anything. We won't even touch that one. Texas Tech beats Arizona 30-22 in a game that I thought probably was closer than it should have been.
Man, I wanted Arizona State to win that game so badly. I don't know. I don't really know why.
Nate, which of these teams is good? Are either of them good? Are they both not good? I'm still so confused.
I think Tech's Tech's good. Tech's good. They just were, I think, okay, let me backtrack. Texas Tech is good offensively. Their defense is a lot like TCU, but they are a little more disciplined than TCU, and I think Texas Tech's going to go a long way and potentially compete for this Big 12 title.
Okay, whoa. That's a lot of words
mark
right
it,
there.
Mark I mean, it right now.
I will mark it. I clip it everything.
I have marked a lot of your comments.
All right,
mark mine.
Nate, if Texas Tech does not make it to the Big 12 championship, I need you to get a Texas Tech tattoo. I'll just say on your upper thigh.
How much confidence?
JD's face
you
on
said
my thigh.
Book it. You said book it. If you're not confident enough to get the double T on your upper thigh, if they don't make the Big 12 championship, then don't say they're going to make the Big 12 championship.
I don't want to scare the ladies away.
Bro, they're already scared. You picked Texas Tech to go to the Big 12 championship.
Tech needed overtime to beat ACU, beat a UNT team that was no good, and
don't
then
hate on ACU.
And then lost to a Washington State team that stormed the field after beating, who was it? Not San Diego.
No, it was Washington. Oh, no, San Jose. It was San
Yeah,
Jose
San
State.
Jose.
San Jose
State. Washington State team that stormed the field. Arizona State needed the hand of God to come knock a fumble away from Texas State to beat them. Like, I still don't know which of these teams are good. Carson, I don't like the face you're making.
Let's not discredit Washington State. I think they beat us by 60 right now. I think Tech is good. I just think Washington State was better than them on every front.
By the way, embarrassing day for the Pac-12. Four American Conference schools declined invitations to the Pac-12 today. So Pac-12, looking too good.
They still put out their Pac-12 standings tweet, and it's my favorite thing in the world.
They did. Utah sneaks by Oklahoma State. I say sneaks by. Utah was up and never really trailed. Oklahoma State just made a last-minute push. 22-19, the final score. Really not the best game from either team, but I do think they kind of were I think they were both kind of cautious going into this one, knowing that this is probably going to be a rematch in December.
Yeah, I mean, if you would ask me who was going to be in it before the Kansas State BYU game, I'll wait until we get to that one. I would have said it would be Utah and Kansas.
Funny you say rematch, because neither one of these teams is Texas Tech. No one.
Texas Tech has an easy finish to their season. Texas Tech has an easy finish to their season.
Look, regardless, the only thing I want to talk about is this is 3 weeks in a row now that Utah has allowed more than 14 points in the fourth quarter and has allowed teams to get way closer than they should be. I don't know if that's a game plan design or what, but it's just something that could end up biting them at some point. Anyways, Nola can't recover, so let's move on. Number 13, Kansas
Baylor,
State.
Colorado. Baylor, Colorado.
Baylor, Colorado. Look.
I don't care.
If you're Dave Aranda and you missed, your defense messed up a Hail Mary attempt and then proceeded to allow said Hail Mary and then lose in overtime, and then when asked about the Hail Mary play, you say it's called Victory Cigar? You can't do that. You gotta lie. You just gotta say it doesn't have a name. Something. I don't care about anything else in this game. I wanted both of them to lose. You cannot say your failed Hail Mary play is called Victory Cigar.
Yeah.
I want to say, after covering Baylor all last year.
Oh, man.
That made me so happy.
Oh, no.
Dave Aranda, man, when he talks to the press, I mean, oh my Lord.
It's either the best experience of your life or the most questionable experience of your life. There
well,
is
I mean,
no
he's always so, like, he tries to be so profound in everything and he thinks about everything. But the my favorite thing about him is, so I thought about this 2 weeks ago after the UCF game, right? Because we were in and out of the 4-7s room in like 10 minutes. When I was down at McLean every time last year, I would be in that press conference room for a solid hour after the game ended. And that's because Aranda would give 8-minute responses. And but like he but my favorite thing was he'd always, every time the question was finished, he goes, yeah, I appreciate you asking that question. Every time. It didn't, I mean, you could have asked him, do you think you're gonna be fired tomorrow? And he would have go, yeah, I appreciate you asking me that. Like that was my favorite thing about, like, Dave Aranda is just a walking meme. I love the guy to death. I really do. I think he's a great guy. He's a great person. But man, yeah, as a head coach of a college football program, especially a Power 4 one. Oh man, and honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this. I am over prime. I was really hoping the Bears at the end of that game would hold on. I'm not gonna lie, I am over prime. I thought I was really pulling for Baylor to hold on to that one, just so everyone would shut up about Colorado.
Yeah, my parlay was pulling for Baylor too. Hate to see that.
Final one, and I can't believe this final score, 38-9. Carson, you've been waiting for this one. BYU takes down Kansas State. And by the way, I don't know if you saw the show track stats of that one punt return. They ended up determining he ran a total of 173 yards on that punt return.
Oh, my gosh.
BYU might have had the single greatest tweet of all time.
Dude, with
the winning graphic saying Lip Moss.
We gotta flash that up. We gotta flash that up for people that watch this.
It was it's
the greatest thing ever.
It was the single greatest winning tweet I think I've seen.
Oh my gosh.
It was, the connection took like 5 seconds once I saw it, but then when it connected, I was like, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. Carson, before you say your piece, Nate's gonna call me out probably right here. So go ahead, Nate. I'm ready for it.
I'm gonna save it.
Brother, you don't got time to save it because BYU still doesn't. Nate thinks that
BYU
has quarterback play, and they don't.
They do. What has he done wrong? Okay, you spurred the beast.
He's playing for BYU.
What has he done wrong, JD?
Number one.
What has he done wrong?
He's been decent, but to say they have a quarterback, I said they still don't have a quarterback, and that is true.
He's consistent. He's winning games. He is winning games.
He's a Mormon.
I wouldn't say he's actually Jewish. He's Jewish.
You're getting us canceled now.
No, he actually is
JD,
Jewish.
JD, what do you mean by that?
Is he actually Jewish?
He actually is Jewish.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so no, he's not winning games. He's preventing them from losing. There's a difference. He is a glorified game manager and chocolate milk manager. That is it.
I mean, all I know is that he is providing them the game style, the gameplay that they need. They don't need a Zach Wilson right now to lead them to that. We saw how that worked for them. They didn't go that far. He is leading them game by game and doing what he needs to do. Avoid turning the ball over, and he is doing well at it. And he is a quarterback that's going to be very successful at the end of the season.
You got it right. He's one of the quarterbacks of all time. I don't think successful is the word you're looking for. He's 72 for 115, not even over 1,000 yards yet. 62% completion percentage, 8.6 average, 9 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. Brother,
but
he is a water boy with a helmet and an earpiece.
You did not just call him a water boy.
By the way, I love Carson's stone face this entire time.
I'm just saying.
0-4?
No, he's 4-0.
Oh, because it's 0-4 to us because you're backwards.
Yeah, you're backwards.
thanks for playing, Carson.
But I just love how everyone's cracking up and having a good time. Carson's just sitting there stone face waiting to get his.
I won't lie. I was trying to. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's an astounding quarterback. I think he gets the job done, but I think he only gets the job done when their defense plays like it has the first four games. Because I would love to see what their average starting field position is. So I don't know how to look that stat up, but
I'll find it.
Please find it. I would love to know, actually.
Well, we can take that off air because unfortunately we are just about out of time.
Yeah.
Guys, I appreciate it. I'm glad we ended up laughing and on a high note because this was a very bad episode we came in. I'm glad we made something good out of it. Frog fans, that does it for the 13th episode of the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of TCU Horned Frogs on SI. Thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, however you find your podcast. We'll see you tomorrow. JD and I will do a preview of this coming week with Kansas with another great show. And until then, for JD Andrus, Carson and Nate joining us, and everyone at KillerFrogs.com, I'm Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody.
Yeah.